You're listening to Inside Israel Today with Gil Hoffman on the Land of Israel Network.
Hello and welcome to Inside Israel Today here on the Land of Israel Network on thelandofisrael.com, broadcasting from Jerusalem at an exciting time here in Jerusalem, where I'm spending a lot of time following around members of Knesset as they are passing their last laws before they go on their extended summer break. And we'll be talking about that soon. But first, I want to tell you about another story I've been writing about, which has been about a fellow named Rabbi Joseph Gutnick of Melbourne, Australia, who is a businessman who received advice many years ago from his Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, his rabbi who died in 1994. The Rebbe told him before he died to look for diamonds in northern Australia, and that proved to be a very smart advice. He also told him that he should do what he can to prevent Israel from giving up land. That process had begun before the rabbi died, that under Yitzhak Rabin, who was elected prime minister in 1992, there was an Oslo peace process. The rabbi was very worried that Israel would be endangered by this process. And so the Chabad movement got involved in the election in 1996 in a way that they never had before in Israeli politics and never will again. They decided that the election between the incumbent Prime Minister Shimon Peres and the young Likud leader Netanyahu must be won by Netanyahu. And so they did a campaign the last 3 days before the election called "Netanyahu is Good for the Jews." They put up banners all over the country with that very simple slogan, "Netanyahu is good for the Jews." And this slogan had a lot of strategy behind it, because Arthur Finkelstein, Netanyahu's strategist, found that a majority of Israelis see themselves as Jewish before Israeli, and part of being Jewish meant to them preserving the land of Israel and preserving their Jewish values, and that Netanyahu could capitalize on this in the election, on what it means to people to be Jewish. And the people that saw themselves as Jewish first were more likely to support Netanyahu, and the people who saw themselves as Israeli first were more likely to support Shimon Peres. And so the Chabad movement prepared this whole campaign in junctions all over the country before the days of the internet being popular. Banners on the streets were the way to go, and that cost money, and Joseph Gutnick paid for it. And so Joseph Gutnick was credited for bringing Netanyahu, who had been behind in the election, to power in 1996, the first time that he got elected prime minister. Imagine, had it not been for this campaign, had it not been for Joseph Gutnick, Shimon Peres could have been reelected and the Oslo process would have continued at full force despite the suicide bombings that were taking place. It could very well be that Israel would look very different today. There are people, including show hosts on the Land of Israel Network, who would probably say Israel might not even be alive today had that election in 1996 gone in a different direction. And so Gutnick, since then, has had his ups and downs financially and in his relationship with Netanyahu. And I had the privilege of having lunch with him in and his family. His wife, Shturna, is a very good cook. On Shavuot, a holiday where people eat dairy products, I was in Melbourne, Australia, to speak for Chabad synagogues, and they set me up to eat at the Gutnick family home. And there I had a fascinating discussion with Joseph Gutnick, with Yussel, as he's called, who told me that he has made an interesting choice on who should be Netanyahu's successor. Not any of the people currently in Likud, not Naftali Bennett, the leader of the Beit Yehudi, the Religious Zionist Party, but the number two in Beit Yehudi, Ayelet Shaked, our Minister of Justice. Yes, an ultra-Orthodox rabbi says he wants there to be a woman prime minister. He believes it's right for Israel in this day and age, and he believes that his rabbi even though he's not with us, would have supported her as well. He believes that she has the right kind of leadership and that she can be elected. That she is the kind of unifier because she's secular, though has a lot of support for religion, being a part of a religious Zionist party. And so he told me that he has been in touch with Ayelet Shaked, that he has been advising her for many years to leave Likud, to leave Bayit Yehudi and join Likud, the ruling party, in order to become elected prime minister. And so when he told me this, I decided this is fascinating, but I shouldn't write it yet. He told me that I should wait, and I agreed, that we should wait for this to be relevant. And I figured it would only be relevant when the next election would be called. And then there might be pressure on her to leave and join Likud. But then something changed. On Friday, the Jerusalem Post, sister paper in Hebrew, Ma'ariv, ran a poll that said that if Ayelet Shaked would lead the Likud in the next election, she could lead the party to 33 seats. The same that Netanyahu would win as head of Likud. Now, the reason why they commissioned this poll was because a few days earlier, David Bitan, who was the coalition chairman for a while and is very close to Netanyahu, said that if Ayelet would run in Likud, she would win the second slot on the party's list after Netanyahu. And so Ma'ariv decided to test it out. When I saw this poll, I said, the time has come. And I got in touch with Yossel, and he agreed with me. And so I wrote this story, which ran in Monday's Jerusalem Post and Ma'ariv, and has resulted in a great uproar. Naftali Bennett was asked on the nightly news on TV about my article, which was kind of cool. And he said that the Likud is trying to divide and conquer inside my party, trying to cause fights between me and Ayelet, and it's not going to work. Ayelet this morning was interviewed on Army Radio here, where she said, I love my party and I'm not going anywhere. But anything can happen in Israeli politics. And this story is going to continue to develop, and it's going to continue to be fascinating. Don't be surprised if you continue to hear in the future Ayelet Shaked as a serious candidate for prime minister, she's not going away. And you will remember that it all came back from one meal that happened on the Shavuot holiday, and that I managed to keep to myself for a whole month and not tell anyone about. Sometimes that's the way scoops develop, in this day and age, usually you have to say things immediately or somebody else is going to find out. And this is something that happened very different. And so, yes, there are a lot of people who are going to seek the Likud leadership whenever Netanyahu goes. You might see up to 10, 15 candidates that will be running in the next Likud election, which could very well happen sometime at the beginning of next year, if as predicted by our legal correspondent, Yonah Jeremy Bob, in the Jerusalem Post, that the Attorney General will decide to indict Netanyahu on charges of bribery in the Case 4000 affair. Don't be surprised if there is then talk about perhaps Ayelet Shaked, perhaps Naftali Bennett joining Likud in order to run, and perhaps Bennett losing, and then Ayelet Shaked running next time. This could all end up happening. So stay tuned to www.jpost.com for all that excitement and action as it happens. The second issue that I wanted to talk about here is what's going on at the Knesset right now, which is that you have 120 Knesset members who have been incarcerated in their chairs in the Knesset plenum. Okay, maybe not all of them, but there has to be a majority of the coalition in the room at any given point because they are going through marathon voting on legislation that they want to pass before the Knesset goes on its long recess. starting at the end of this week. When I say long recess, it could be a recess forever. Currently, they're supposed to come back in mid-October, but when they come back in mid-October, they could be initiating an election. And that would mean you'd have an election coming up in February, March, takes a month to form a government. They wouldn't really be doing anything really important until May. When you've got Israel's Independence Day, they've got a vacation then too. Don't be surprised if they barely work over the next year. So this is a very big week in the Knesset. And having said that, I want to praise the members of Knesset because people think that they are slackers and don't work at all. And that is not true. They eventually do work. They just procrastinate. They wait until there's more political pressure to pass bills, such as at the very end of a Knesset session before they go off on vacation. So they have been passing a slew of bills that are very interesting and make lives better for people. Overnight, they passed a bill saying that women do not have to wait in line anymore if they are pregnant. They passed a bill saying that every educational institution in Israel must have an EpiPen to help people with allergies, children with allergies. They passed something recognizing the need for young people with disabilities to be able to go to pre-army academies and facilitating that. They're passing a bill today that will help this terrible dilemma that there has been for people who happen to be Prime Minister of Israel, that their expenses are taxed. And they're going to allow all those poor people to not have their expenses taxed anymore. Okay, so that is a bill that helps only one person, but it does help him anyway. That's the kind of thing that they're passing nowadays. They passed a law overnight that says that companies will have to give a human to answer phone calls within 6 minutes after waiting on hold. That's wonderful, wonderful news. I can't wait to call my cable company and get somebody within 6 minutes. We will no longer have to pay property tax on a pergola. Pergola is a Hebrew, an English word, not just a Hebrew word, right? So all these things have passed in a very exciting way. And so next time they tell you that members of Knesset don't really work, remember what's going on this week. After the break, we will be speaking to an expert on what's going on behind the scenes in the Knesset and Ayelet Shaked's BIDD party, in particular, Jeremy Salton.
One of the rockets fell right by the house.
Josh Haston here, host of Israel Uncensored on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. Tune into my show this week for an exclusive interview with Rabbi Dov Fendel, the head of the Hesder Yeshiva in the town of Sderot. Just over the weekend, over 200 rockets and projectiles fired at southern Israel.
The Palestinians are trying their best to make this place into a ghost town. We're not going to let them. They're trying to break our spirit. They don't realize it's invincible, unbreakable. Thousands of years old.
Hear that interview and all the latest news, Israel Uncensored, on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. Don't miss the show.
And we're back here on the Land of Israel Network, on thelandofisrael.com, here on Inside Israel Today, where in the first part of the show, we spoke about the Knesset passing laws in its last week before it goes on what could be a very extended recess. And we spoke about the scoop that I had this week in the Jerusalem Post about the Australian diamond miner, Rabbi Joseph Gutnick, who in 1996 helped Netanyahu become the Prime Minister of Israel for the first time, and who told me exclusively that he believes that Netanyahu's rightful successor should be the number two in the BIDD party, our Justice Minister Ayelet Shaked. And with those things happening, no better person to welcome on my show than a man who is both an insider in the Knesset And also, the head of the Mevaseret Zion branch in the Bayit Yehudi party of Naftali Bennett and Ayala Shaked, and a veteran of the Land of Israel Network's predecessor, the Voice of Israel Network, Jeremy Salton. Thank you for coming here on Inside Israel Today.
Thank you. It's great to be with you once again, my friend Gil.
Okay, so what have been people talking about behind the scenes in Bayit Yehudi about this story that I had about the representative of God, if you will, in the Chabad movement deciding that God's choice as the next emissary of the Rebbe and therefore emissary of God in the Prime Minister's office being Ayala Shaked?
You know, I'm a big fan of Chabad. I asked, you know, before I get into what people are talking about in Bayit Yehudi, I asked when I went to go for the morning prayers. I went to Chabad this morning, Shacharit, so I could ask them what it was, if this was like a blanket approval from the Rebbe, from God, what it was. And they just responded, no comment. So I found that interesting. But going back to the Bayit Yehudi, so as you know, before you had your scoop, which everyone talked about on the Israeli news for the last 24 hours about, it started with last week, David Bitan, with his speech. It continued on with the scenario poll that was taken out in Ma'ariv. There were a bunch of various reports of stuff that were either leaked or fabricated that came and were spoke on the news by various outlets before you went ahead and came forth with your story. And really what we're talking about and what we seem to be feeling is that this is a concentrated Likud effort directed to try to break the Bayit Yehudi up and also to try to specifically help the Likud in the municipal elections in October. First, on the first part, I also saw that Yoaz Hendel actually came out with an article today in which he explains his view of why it is that he thinks that Netanyahu is deciding to break up the Bayit Yehudi. And his outlook is pretty much that if Netanyahu is able to break up the Bayit Yehudi, then he doesn't have to worry about going to the right in the next election. He can go to the center. And what better way to do it than to offer the number two spot to Ayala Shaked to try to convince Kuma to break off with the relations that he has with the Kuma leaders and sort of try to demolish Bayit Yehudi? That's coming from Hendel. But from the Bayit Yehudi, you know, I heard various reasons of why Netanyahu might be trying to break down the Bayit Yehudi. Most of them center around the relationship, of course, with Netanyahu and Bennett. And what used to be, I guess, Netanyahu and Shaked as well, since the two of them were in the same boat until quite recently, apparently, in terms of the gossip columns. But the second aspect that I mentioned, which is the municipal elections, Ayala Shaked was just yesterday, last night, doing what she's been doing for the last couple months, which is going through the country every night in another place. The Bayit Yehudi is running 65 municipal lists across the country. Last night, she was in Ramat Gan campaigning for Avihu Ben Moshe, and she campaigned for me in Mevaseret just a few weeks ago. And what she said in Mevaseret, what she said in Ramat Gan last night, even after all of these things came out, including your breaking story yesterday, is the same thing. I'm Ayala Shaked. You guys like me. You know me. You trust me. This Bayit Yehudi official is my person. I want you to vote for my person in the municipal elections. There is the municipal elections in October. Very likely the national elections are going to be after that. This is going to be a litmus test to see how good we are, how strong we are. That's why I'm asking all of you people, not just religious people, the secular people in the audience, everything, vote Bayit Yehudi in the municipal elections. Now, I can tell you, not just from Mevaseret Zion, but what I've heard from my other friends among the 65 municipal leaders, this is something that has scared a lot of Likud mayors and a lot of the other Likud deputy mayors in areas where Likud is not mayor, since they're usually just about every country, one or the other these days. And they have brought those feelings up towards the MKs and ministers saying, guys, this is a very smart proposition that if Bayit Yehudi is able to do well in the municipal elections, that could translate to the national elections, which just about everyone thinks is going to happen within a number of months after the municipal elections in October. So you guys need to do something now, because if you don't help us, we're not even going to be in a position to be able to help you when it's your turn around. And that's something that's resonated a lot with a lot of Likud people. So the best way to go ahead and to deal with that specific issue is to very clearly say, listen, Shaked is on her way to Likud. Dismiss everything she said in that parlor meeting or in that big rally or event to Beit Yudi. She's talking about her people whenever. She's coming to Likud. I'm Likud. I've always been Likud. I've been Likud for decades. Vote for me. Forget about people like Jeremy or Aviv Ben Moshe. And ignore everything she said. And again, a spin like that, whether it's coming because of bad blood with Netanyahu, whether it's coming because they want to actually crash the Beit Yudi party from within, similar to what Bibi did to crash Kadima from within with the famous O'Neill Schneller mole and everything that went on over there, or it's, again, this municipal leader thing, it is very clear. Whatever theory you want to take, again, whether you're listening to people within the Beit Yudi or just people within the various aspects of the different distribution along the spectrum of the right in terms of the Knesset hallways, this is a Likud concentrated effort, whatever the reason being, to try to bring down the Beit Yudi.
Disagree. You know, I let you talk for a long time there. I think I don't have anyone I've let ramble on for so long other than a Holocaust survivor who was over 90, who I pretty much let go for 20 minutes. I respect your analysis there, but I want to tell the listeners, okay, I'm not part of a conspiracy, and I doubt that there is one. I really do. What happened was that David Bitton was asked a question at a meeting of the legal bar association in Eilat about Ayelet Shaked, and he gave her a compliment. He gave her a compliment in the way that David Bitton, who's a Likud guy, knows how to give a compliment. Oh, she's so cool that she would beat anyone in Likud if she ran in my party. It's a nice thing to say when you want to say something nice about somebody, for somebody who has a point of view that his whole life is inside the Likud party. And then Maariv decided, you know what? That's an interesting idea. Let's see what that would look like in a poll. And found that she did very well. And Gil Hoffman, who had this conversation with Yossel Gutnick in Australia a month ago and had been intending to wait with a story for the next election to be called for it to be relevant, said, you know what? If this poll ran, it's relevant now. Let's go with it. Nobody here was trying to hurt the Beit Yudi. Nobody here was trying to do, using Naftali Bennett's words from last night on TV, a strategy of divide and conquer. News just develops this way. And the rumors that Jeremy was referring to are that when Ayelet Shaked was the bureau chief and Naftali Bennett, the chief of staff of Netanyahu, when he was the leader of the opposition, left on bad terms because Netanyahu's wife, Sarah, found out that Netanyahu was paying them, was paying Ayelet out of pocket, and the same thing with just the expenses of Naftali, who was a millionaire on his own and no reason to be paid. She screamed at Ayelet and at Naftali, "You're stealing food away from my children, Yair and Avner." And that since then, Ayelet has not been allowed to be in Netanyahu's presence privately. She has not been invited to the prime minister's residence, and she has not been invited on planes together with the prime minister, even when they're traveling to the same place for the same meetings. And these kinds of things make it unlikely that Netanyahu would be actively trying to pursue her. And so I think your whole theory there is far-fetched, Jeremy.
So I appreciate your analysis, and obviously I would never accuse the great and neutral Gil Hoffman of being part of any conspiracy. You did interview someone who was thinking about this, and as you said, wanted the story to be held for before election time. I've known for some time, and I'm sure you have as well, and you've heard a lot of things in terms of various points when Beit Yudi was going up in the polls, that there were all this talk about maybe Ayelet breaking away from Naftali and going ahead and being a member of Likud. As you know, David Bitton traditionally is the mouthpiece. I know that he's only coming back now into politics, as he likes to say, after his brief recess from commenting on public affairs while he was dealing with his own investigations, which seems to be a thing that unfortunately a lot of Likud people need to deal with these days, such as Minister Chaim Katz and so on. But regardless of that point, when Bitan says something, it's usually because Netanyahu told him to say it. And you're right, that could have been a simple way to give a compliment. But I'll tell you something, Gil, also as an elected official, when I want to go ahead and compliment someone, and for instance, I really like the Likud party branch chairman in Mivaseret, and he's a nice guy. And he's also probably a lot more popular than me. Perhaps even within my own party, not only, you know, within the city. The last thing I would do is to to suggest that if he ran in my party, he would get the number one spot. That's just not the type of way that politicians give compliments. That isn't the type of thing that you would say. As you know, David Bitan is one of the people who wants to be minister in Likud. He wants to get as high of a spot as he can in the next Likud primaries, to be saying that this person is such a good person, they could run in my party and beat me and be the top of that list. That seems to me, again, far-fetched for that to be an innocent thing. There are at least 50 different compliments I can think of in which you can really thank Ayelet for the amazing work that she's doing. And I could also point to previous things that Bitan said about Ayelet in the beginning of the term, which were not so positive. But regardless of all that, I understand your position that you think that this is a simple thing. I tend to not see innocence when things like this happen. I think that, like you said, you are right, that there are a lot of pieces that are falling into place following this Bitan interview. And a lot of them is just the way that the news cycle works. That's the way media works. I agree with that aspect. But what I do know is Netanyahu is very, very good at this in terms of controlling the public opinion, in terms of controlling what is the specific topics that we are going to be talking about on any given day, of course, with the exception of his investigations, which always have a way of creeping back into the news. But he's usually able to, and even a lot of times with investigation stuff being the top story on a lot of other stations, of being able to provide a different narrative and enough stuff to be thrown to the various people in terms in the media, in terms of being able to shift focus.
I wanted to ask you about the bills that are being passed in the Knesset this week, because, you know, people have an impression that the Knesset members are slackers, that they don't work very hard. And
oh,
here they're passing dozens of bills into law.
This is going to be probably the busiest week, not just of the year, but of the Knesset term. Last week, we passed 11 bills into law. You know, we voted on several dozen, but a lot of that was in the first reading, or there were votes on the preliminary reading, since we're getting it to the end of the summer session, which the end of it is really, you know, technically is Thursday, which probably will be Thursday, because the Wednesday session will probably once again, just like last night and probably tonight, go over midnight into the next day and not leave our MKs with a lot of sleeping hours. But yeah, just this week, I would estimate, and again, this can change, we're probably going to pass, I would say, 20-something bills into law in the final reading. There's a lot of bills that we're also voting on in the first reading, which is important, because if we do end up in a situation, which you hinted at the beginning of our interview, in which we have elections right after we come back from the recess, just like we had in 2013, where I had a three-month recess. We came back on the first day after the recess, voted for a Knesset election, and then took a election recess for another 3 months, in which for one day of work, I got 6 paychecks. And that is really the great example of not, you know, of government not working. What you have here today is really the government working very hard. Each one of them case is sleeping maybe 3 hours at best. They're voting within the plenum until all hours of the night. Then they come back in the morning. They're dealing with committee votes before they go up to the plenum. There's a sense of urgency within the corridors of the Knesset that we need to be able to pass as many laws as we can in their final reading right now, because we might not have an opportunity to do so in the next session. And there's also the feeling that if we at least get some of this other stuff done in the first reading, then you'll be able to apply a Din Ritzifut in the next Knesset, since this government does expect to be the next government of Israel, even after we have an election,
that
and that we won't have to start.
It wouldn't have to be voted on from the very beginning. They would
We won't have to go through. Right, we won't have to go through, again, the Ministerial Committee of Legislative Affairs, waiting, you know, months to get there for your turn and to be discussed and postponed and discussed again and then voted on the preliminary reading, then the whole round of committee hearings and voting before you even get up to the first reading. So there's just been a flurry of votes on legislation. Just last night, we passed a bunch of bills. I read your tweet, which did a great justice in mentioning the important ones. Of course, to me, I feel especially the one that says that people that go overseas and really attack the IDF and criticize them have no place to be in our schools, in our education system. That's against our values. That's against what we hold dear. Again, we're not abolishing them from the law or anything, but we are choosing the people who are allowed to speak to our children who are impressionable. And we make sure that the education values they get is that we love the IDF and the IDF is good. The nation state bill, which will come up tomorrow, most likely, or again, it could happen already after midnight into Thursday, since my feeling is they're probably going to want to save the best for last. I think that that is going to be really the most important bill that not just this Knesset passes this term, I think of this entire generation. You know, after having 12 basic laws that define the democratic nature of the country, to have that one basic law that defines the Jewish nature of the country, that gives our state symbol, our flag, our national anthem, our language, giving them the constitutional status, just like it is in every other country except the state of Israel, that we, without apologizing, say, yes, our state symbol is the menorah. You know, that's a Jewish symbol. Our national anthem talks about us returning home to the land of Zion, to Jerusalem, that we don't apologize for that, that we chose the colors of our flag with the Star of King David there in the middle and the colors of the Talit. You know, really just go ahead and have those things cemented with inconstitutional status so that we are like every other one of those nations. I think that is really going to be one of the biggest feats, if not the biggest feat, and most important piece of legislation, as I mentioned, in this generation.
Okay. You heard it. Jeremy Salton, the Knesset insider here, and an insider in the Baidudi party, talking about what the Knesset is doing this week. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being with us here on the Land of Israel Network, on thelandofisrael.com, and we'll have another exciting show from Jerusalem next week. Stay with us.
The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King said that the ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy. Ours is a story filled with both challenge and controversy, but ultimately, it's also a story of hope and redemption. I'm Rav Mike Foyer, and this is The Jewish Story.
Join Rav Mike Foyer for the best Jewish history podcast, The Jewish Story, on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com.